A very good Monday. Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you national and regional agricultural news headlines. And I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Each year, the California Department of Food and Agriculture conducts a two-phase competitive solicitation process to award funds to projects that enhance the competitiveness of California's specialty crops. Grant awards will range from $100,000 to $500,000 per project, and projects must last up to 2 years and 8 months. Nonprofit and for-profit organizations, local, state, federal, and tribal government entities, and public and private colleges and universities are eligible to apply. Projects submitted to the Additional Assistance for Historically Underrepresented Organizations program, only available to nonprofits and tribal governments, will range from $100,000 to $250,000. Specialty crops include fruits and vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, horticulture, and nursery crops, including floriculture. 2023 requests for budget concept proposals can be reviewed on the California Department of Food and Agriculture website. All applicants must register online with AppliFund. Concept proposals must be submitted electronically using AppliFund by Friday, September 16th at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. The California Department of Food and Agriculture will conduct a series of webinars featuring an overview of the program, a review of concept proposal questions, and a demonstration for the AppliFund application system. Prospective applicants are encouraged to visit the program's website. For more information and details, call 916-657-3231. You can also call that number for information on upcoming webinars. Earlier this year, 14-store Southern California grocery chain Bristol Farms premiered a new retail format at the Irvine Spectrum Center, an upscale open-air shopping mall in Irvine, California. Bristol Farms' newfound market, as the new 34,000-square-foot store is called, combines a Bristol Farms grocery experience with a food hall featuring 7 dining destinations created by the company's chefs. It is really the next iteration of the Bristol Farms brand, according to Scott Wiggins, director of produce operations for Bristol Farms. He says they want to give their customers an elevated shopping experience while sharing Bristol Farms quality food and standards. Irvine Spectrum is a destination drawing a wide variety of guests. They're excited about this opportunity to serve not only people who visit the property, but the surrounding neighborhoods as well. As is the case with all Bristol Farms locations, BF New Found Market prioritizes organic produce. Wiggins says that the produce departments at the Bristol Farms banner stores are about 75% organic, while he estimates that BF New Found Market's produce offerings are 80 to 85% organic. He said they've added many new items to their wet rack, organic bok choy, and other specialty items to specifically appeal to the discerning shopper. In general, Wiggins notes that Bristol Farms has been focusing on expanding its relationship with local organic farmers, and he names Staley Farms Organics and Dickinson Family Farms as two examples of local growers whose organic produce can be found at the Irvine store. Now more than ever, Bristol Farms is partnering with small-scale local organic growers that grow their produce within 100 miles of their store, he says. This clear definition of local is important to and valued by their customers. Bristol Farms Irvine presented an exciting opportunity to build new relationships with local farmers and increase their hyper-local itemization. Because of this, he says, you might find some produce that's only in their Irvine store because of growing capacity and the fact that the farm is within a 100-mile radius. And when it comes to the company's organic produce merchandising strategy, he says that Bristol Farms highlights its local organic produce with special signage that calls out the item and the grower. He says Bristol Farms also likes to feature its best local organic items on in-cap displays to boost their exposure. In terms of organic produce consumer favorites, Wiggins says right now organic stone fruit is very popular at all Bristol Farms locations, including BF Newfound Market. On the 20th anniversary of the Napa Valley Venters Community Health Center, Napa Valley Venters has announced a gift of the 25,000 square foot facility to OLE Health. The building, valued at $17 million, is the largest ever single donation by a nonprofit to NVV. When it comes to supporting its communities, Napa Valley is a global leader in the wine industry. This most recent gift is only one example of the long-running commitment the Napa Valley wine industry has to its community. Over the last 40 years, NVV has given more than $225 million to local nonprofits in the areas of healthcare and children's welfare and education, including more than $60 million to OLE Health. The facility was the first permanent home of OLE Health. This major step is playing an important role in its growth over the next 20 years. In 1972, OLE Health was founded by farm workers and Venters to provide health care to low-income, uninsured individuals. Today, the collaboration between OLE Health and the Napa Valley wine industry continues providing affordable care to the community, serving one in four residents, including more than 4,000 farm workers. And finally, August is National Peach Month. California leads the nation in peach production. The state leads with 36,800 acres, which is 49% of the U.S. total peach production crop. The value of California peaches is $378,391,000.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Storing harvested nuts in stockpiles until they can be hulled and processed requires careful management on the part of growers and processors to preserve nut quality and avoid food safety issues. To prevent mold or other quality issues from invading stockpiles, the grower has the responsibility of delivering nuts that can be safely stored for months as well. One of the biggest concerns, according to Tim Birmingham, Director of Quality Assurance and Industry Services for Almond Board of California, in stockpiles is moisture.
You have to control the moisture of the almonds that are going into these stockpiles. If you don't control the moisture, you can have a lot of problems that develop. You can have concealed damage, which results in an interior brown spot of the almond once it's processed. And that creates challenges for the end user because it doesn't necessarily manifest itself until it's been subjected to a heat type process. You can have other issues such as mold growth. And we know that, you know, certain molds such as Aspergillus can produce aflatoxin, and that's a big concern for the industry. Particularly when you look at where our product is going, we ship a lot of product to the European market. The European market has tighter tolerances for aflatoxin than what we have here in the U.S. If we're not able to adequately control the levels of aflatoxin in our product, that's a problem. We'll see more rejections in the EU, and that's very costly. So we want to do everything that we can here on our end, really, to maintain that quality, to make sure that the almonds in the stockpiles are handled properly and make sure that we're monitoring the moisture. So some things that really I think both the growers and the processors need to be in lockstep with is that moisture coming in out of the field. And so really as a guideline, what we like to say is that the kernel moisture should be less than 6%, the hull moisture less than 12%, or that total fruit, you know, the in-hull, in-kernel, in-shell moisture at less than 9%. If you look at those as benchmarks and you don't put almonds into stockpiles that are at higher levels than those values, then you should be okay. So you really want to control that moisture, you know, coming in. And like I said, it needs to be, you know, communication between the grower and the hauler or sheller. It need to be in lockstep on making sure that that moisture is met. You know, some other things that the haulers need to be aware of. They need to build these stockpiles and they need to build them in a manner that's going to minimize additional problems that could occur once they're in the stockpiles. So some things that we like to advise when you choose the location for your stockpiles, look to see if you can elevate those stockpiles or, you know, at least get them on a slightly sloped surface so that you can, you know, avoid any moisture that's pooling in the stockpile. You want to drain away any excess moisture that may accumulate. You're going to cover these stockpiles. So when you cover them, you want to, you know, again, you want to do some things that are going to minimize the formation of moisture or pockets of moisture in those stockpiles. So you want to look at flat tops, long stockpiles that are orientated from north to south. That's going to minimize moisture buildup underneath the tarps. You want to look at white on black tarps if possible. That's going to help minimize temperature fluctuation in the stockpile. Temperature fluctuation can cause moisture to develop up on the underside of the tarps and create, you know, pockets of moisture. So that's something that you want to do if possible. I think, you know, once the almonds are in the stockpile, one of the main things is really, you know, understanding what's happening as far as a humidity standpoint or a moisture standpoint in that stockpile. And so that's going to dictate, you know, really how you manage that stockpile. If you're monitoring the moisture in that stockpile, you're looking at the relative humidity, then you can make some decisions as to whether or not you need to vent that stockpile on a periodic basis. And if the humidity in that stockpile is, you know, around 65% or less, I think generally you're okay. If you start to climb above that value, you really need to be looking at management strategies to vent that stockpile on a regular basis to prevent, you know, moisture from building up. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I think Wang Wei can add some more context around the importance of making sure that we're managing moisture in these stockpiles.
Before transporting nuts to the processors, some of this responsibility will fall on the hands of the grower. Guangwei Huang, Associate Director of Food and Research and Technology, said that leaving nuts on the tree to fully mature is recommended so as to not drop a wet product.
Should not rush to shake the tree. Monitor the tree, the nut maturity closely. Only shake the tree at the proper time to allow most drying occur when nuts are still on the trees. That's a much cleaner, the shorter drying, and then you shake it too early, the product, high moisture product drop on the ground, you take a longer time to dry on the ground. Also, before they shake the tree, they really need to prepare for the harvest. They need to sanitize the orchard, level the orchard, get rid of the debris from the orchard ground so that they have cleaner product. When after they shake the tree, after a few days drying, because the nuts fall in the windrow or fall in the tree row, they dry unevenly. There is a couple percentage point difference between the tree row and the windrow. So really after a few days, a couple of days drying on the ground, the grower are encouraged to windrow and they use a conditioner to remove those debris and leaves, allowing more even drying so that can have a better drying. So before, they need to closely monitor the moisture level by their some quick device or simple device or by their experience. They need to test the kernel moisture by their experience or use equipment from different parts of orchard, because sometimes there's uneven dry in a different zone of orchard. So they had to make sure the most of the moisture from most of the zone areas reach the moisture to the safe moisture level. As a team mentioned, ideally it should be less than 6% in the kernel moisture, less than 12% in whole moisture, or less than 9% in whole nut moisture. However they measure it, they should use either of those should work. So make sure most of the spots that nuts from most areas fall in the safe moisture level before they decide to pick up. When they pick up, if the moisture is still in the marginal, they need to try to pick up nuts at the maybe afternoon time. So that allowing that, sunlight come out to chase some moisture, the morning moisture or light moisture away, so that they have a neither drier product to deliver to the orchards.
One other thing to think about on the grower end, almond stockpiles aren't really common on farm, but as whole or sheller capacity becomes reached, they are an option for a grower. The ideal site would have a slight slope to drain away moisture and a hard surface. The shape and positioning of the stockpile can also control moisture and mold growth. An even flat top helps prevent pooling of moisture in low spots, and positioning the long side of the stockpile from north to south also helps prevent condensation from forming. For For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
In with agricultural news here today, I'm Lori Boyer. American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Director of Government Affairs Dave Samuelson says his organization will continue to press for binding market access agreements despite President Joe Biden's anti-free trade deal policy. Samuelson says AFBF won't stop pressing to boost market access, even as Biden's special ag negotiator nominee Doug McCallop would be hamstrung by the president's no FDA policy if confirmed.
We're pressing for market access wherever we can. We want better trade relationship with a lot of countries. I think he will have a portfolio in that job to express the needs for American agriculture and trade.
In effect, Samuelson paints McCallop's role in part as a listening post or conduit between the ag community and the White House.
There'll be a lot of attention paid through his office to these issues from the outside, from both the ag stakeholder community, from the Hill, from Congress, and he'll have to deal with that.
Samuelson does not expect McCallop to change the administration's approach to trade, but suggests Farm Bureau won't be shy about delivering its longstanding message on trade.
Greater market access. We've said that, and we'll say again, we'd like to see more engagement to get towards real binding agreements in the future. Yeah, that's a consistent message from us.
McCallop insists that short of new trade deals, he'll push to expand ag trade in the UK, the Indo-Pacific, Latin America, and parts of Africa. Seven Western states that rely on Colorado River water were told by government officials to develop a plan to dramatically reduce water usage by as much as 4 million acre feet. The LA Times says those negotiations did not result in agreement, so the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation announced new emergency water cuts for states like Arizona and Nevada and in Mexico as the nation's two biggest reservoirs that are at historically low levels. In order to avoid a catastrophic collapse of the Colorado River system, the future of uncertainty and conflict, water use in a basin must get reduced, according to Tanya Trujillo, Assistant Secretary for Water and Science with the Interior Department. Under the Tier 2 Shortage Declaration, Arizona's yearly water allotment is reduced by 21%, Nevada's by 8%, and Mexico's by 7%. Every sector state has a responsibility to ensure water gets used with maximum efficiency, according to Trujillo. The United States and Taiwan reached an agreement on the negotiating mandate for the U.S.-Taiwan Initiative on 21st Century Trade that was announced on June 1st. The negotiating mandate sets out the broad objectives shared by both countries for the upcoming negotiations. The first round of talks will likely take place in early fall. Today, they begin negotiations with Taiwan that will deepen the trade and investment relationship, advance mutual trade priorities based on shared values, and promote innovation and inclusive economic growth for workers and businesses, according to Deputy U.S. Trade Representative Sarah Bianchi. The U.S. and Taiwan have set a robust agenda for negotiations on trade facilitation, good regulatory practices, strong anti-corruption standards, and enhancing trade between small and medium enterprises in both countries. They plan to pursue an ambitious schedule for achieving high standard commitments and meaningful outcomes to help build a prosperous 21st century economy, according to Bianchi. Almost 50 million children are returning to public schools, and a group of dairy and nutrition advocates is encouraging parents and policymakers to remember dairy. The dairy advocates say when it comes to the health of students, milk and dairy product options need to be more accessible during the school year. The group released a fact sheet pointing out that milk is the top 10 source of calcium, potassium, phosphorus, and vitamin D in kids ages 2 to 18. Unfortunately, the USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services say children over 4 and adolescents aren't getting enough dairy to meet recommendations in the federal dietary guidelines, missing out on several nutrients that they need to grow. Michael Dykes of International Dairy Foods Association says school meals are an important opportunity for children to get the nutrients they need. Now is when they need to work together to encourage nutritious milk consumption every day. A new Environmental Protection Agency draft ecological risk assessment released last week finds the herbicide dicamba potentially adversely affects birds, mammals, bees, freshwater fish, aquatic vascular plants, and non-target terrestrial plants, with a primary risk of concern for non-target terrestrial plants through spray drift and volatilization. In addition, the agency said it found no evidence that new measures that were put into place in October of 2020 for over-the-top applications helped to reduce the number of off-target incidents. In 2016, dicamba is currently undergoing routine registration review in the U.S., and the draft risk assessments are part of that review. Dicamba is the active ingredient in a range of agricultural and non-agricultural weed control products sold by a range of companies. The EPA conducts registration reviews for all approved pesticide active ingredients every 15 years. Dicamba was first approved by the EPA in 1967. EPA said that it is reviewing whether OTT dicamba can be used in a manner that does not pose unreasonable risks to non-target crops and other plants or to listed species and their designated critical habitats. In addition, the agency said it was evaluating all regulatory options. The EPA has launched a 60-day public comment review period on the latest assessment. In addition, they issued an addendum to a March 2016 human health risk assessment for new dicamba uses. That assessment found no inhalation risks of concern except for occupational handlers. The agency expanded the assessment in May of 2016 to include all uses subject to registration review. After reviewing public comments, EPA said it will create a proposed interim decision set for completion in 2023.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Every 3 hours, a person or vehicle is struck by a train in the United States. Knowing basic railroad safety is imperative to decreasing this statistic. Teresa Keene, President and CEO of AgSafe, tells us more about trains and railroad safety.
Trains are really magnificent. When you stop and think about how much freight they are able to transport across the U.S., thinking about transporting us across the U.S., but they are big and they are heavy and they move fairly fast. Which means that they don't have the ability to stop on a dime like our vehicles do. It takes a freight train traveling about 55 miles an hour, 16 football fields to stop. So that is about a mile in length. And so when you start to consider that and their inability to stop for a vehicle that is stopped on the railroad tracks, it becomes a very dangerous situation.
Approximately 15% of all crossing collisions happen at private, unguarded crossings, which tend to be in rural areas or on farms. Keene gives us some tips on staying safe at unguarded crossings.
Earlier this summer, we actually had two accidents that occurred. They were really tragic. Both of them happened at unguarded railroad tracks. So really want to make sure that folks pay attention. Just a good reminder. Anytime that you see a railroad track, I need you to think train. You never know when trains are coming. Amtrak, they have an official schedule, and so we know when those come, but freight trains can come at any time and either direction. So anytime that you see a railroad track, think, there's a train coming. So if there are no guards, I need you to make sure that you slow down and also be prepared to stop. And you want to be at least your front end of your car 15 feet away from that railroad track. And also leaving 15 feet behind if you have just crossed over as well. And now you're waiting at maybe a stoplight or something like that. So you want to make sure that you are clear from those railroad tracks. And then I need you to also, especially for those unguarded ones, roll down your windows, turn down that radio. Tell the kids to be quiet in the back of the seat and listen and look both ways. Make sure that you don't see a train coming, hear a train coming. They are fast. They are also not as noisy as they used to be, and they not may also not blow their horn. So need everybody to be aware of that. Now, if you're coming up to a guarded track, so always obey the warning signs and always look for a train again before crossing. Make sure again that there's that space on the other side of that track. I have done that a couple of times where I've crossed over and there was a stoplight and I was hopeful I had cleared the track enough so that way if a train did come, I'd be in the clear. So again, making sure you have that 15 feet of buffer on each side of your car. You also want to make sure that you avoid shifting when you're going over the tracks as well.
It is especially important for ag workers to be alert and aware when they are crossing unguarded railroad tracks in rural areas with ag equipment.
Well, we have some special considerations to take into mind when we're crossing over those tracks with, say, we've got a trailer. So if you've got a load, I want you to think about a couple of different things. First of all, check and make sure your hitch pins are secure so they can't dislodge when you're going over the tracks. And make sure that your loads are secure because you don't want things tipping over, spilling while you're going over those tracks. So that is something to keep in mind. Again, making sure that you're leaving that buffer of 15 feet on each side. Now you might be a little bit longer, so more considerations to take into account. And then also make sure that that you have your liquids. They're not too top heavy. And so something that might be prone to spilling or tipping over. So be careful about that. The other thing too is sometimes you have those low ground crossing signs, and so you might hit bottom. So if you drive anything that's low to the ground, like a bus, a truck, a trailer, you're at risk of getting kind of hung up on those railroad tracks. So do not proceed until you know your vehicle will clear those tracks. And once you start crossing, keep going. Make sure that you get on the other side. So. And then one other thing to keep in mind, if you happen to get stuck on the railroad tracks, here's what we need you to do. If you get stuck, get out of that vehicle immediately, get away from your vehicle. And there is a blue emergency sign. I hope now that you all look for it, that has a phone number to call in case of emergency. It also has on there what the crossing location is. So that way the Federal Railroad Administration, they know exactly where you are and can alert the right people to let them know that you're stuck and you need help. If there is not that that notification, you don't see that blue sign, then you call 911 and let them know where you are. It's really, really important that you just get away from that vehicle. Make sure you make those calls. Call the number that's on that blue sign and tell them where you are, or 911 and get away from that vehicle. So those are some of my tips for being safe around railroads. One thing I did want to point folks to is there is a great resource out there that you should check out. It's called Operation Lifesaver. It's a 501c3, and this is what they specialize in. This is where I've gotten all my information about railroad safety. You should check them out. They've got all kinds of resources for ag, all kinds of different industries, and then also, you know, to educate kids as well as adults and to help us making sure that we are safe.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.